This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, May 10th, 2021, and we're still in the aftermath of the big shocker on Friday, the non-farm payrolls change in the U.S. for April, only registering a gain of plus 266,000. That was versus expectations of about a million, and the revisions were even negative for the prior 2 months. We've talked back and forth about this, Peter, but to me, first of all, it's a horrifically statistically massaged number, to put it charitably, with all kinds of built-in assumptions. And if you look at some of the other data we've seen recently, a couple of the claims figures have been very nice. The ISM services for April, which was dealing with the same data cycle, saw an employment sub-index reading of 58.8, the strongest for the cycle, suggesting that hiring in the services sector, the dominant sector of the U.S. economy, is improving at a better rate than it has for a long time. So I'm a bit reluctant to go all in on this reaction. We've got some interesting I think, points to make here, but
I have a little bit of a different take on the unemployment data, because I like this what's called U6 unemployment time series, where the one we always talk about is the U3, and the U3 only looks at full-time employment, and the U6 also looks at part-time and marginal attached employment. So the and you actually had a positive surprise in the U6. So it looks like the improvements we're seeing right now in the U.S. labor market for now is at the fringes of the labor market. So it's the part times that are rolling in. Also because you had a surprise upside surprise on the participation rate. So I think, and there is, as Eleanor, our strategist out of Sydney said, I mean, there is just, and you said, John, I mean, there's so much noise in this time series. But if you take all the other indicators into the equation, I think that the trajectory is still going down. And so, in other words, the unemployment goes down, employment is going up.
Yeah, my point is I'm a bit reluctant to react full on with where the market's reacting, although I think there's some nuances in what's going on with the reaction here, and that's going to be important to pick apart. But first of all, let's go, the sort of headline equity market reaction was, of course, positive, but it wasn't tremendously positive. I think part of it being, you could argue there's a reaction of, oh, hooray for bad data. It means more support from central bank, more fiscal support. This almost, to, for us, old sort of old-fashioned types, or at least I'm including myself in that category. this classic reaction pattern we've seen since the global financial crisis, that bad data is good because it means more support for the market, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we saw a rally, but we still haven't taken out those key levels. If we look at the NASDAQ 100, even though the broader market did close at a new high. So that 13,800 area is quite interesting to me. It's that last major Fibonacci retracement level, and it's just under the 21-day moving average, slightly above that. So, we're still stuck here a little bit. We haven't fully blasted back towards the cycle highs. And I think part of the reason we didn't get a more sort of full-throated response in the more speculative corner of the market is, if you go to slide, and by the way, if I didn't mention that was on slide 2 of today's slide deck, if you go to slide 3, I think you see a very interesting reaction if you look at how the U.S. yield curve reacted to this data point. And that is that you get this sense that maybe the market is simply relieved that the whole sense of urgency from the Fed could be taken away from now. Hey, we got a weak data point. That means they're not going to bring the taper talk into the June FOMC, blah, blah, blah. And you even see, because that'll see the new revisions on the economic forecast and the policy forecast from the Fed. And so you saw that for something like the anticipation of Fed moves out towards December of next year, on the left, you see the December 22 euro dollar, which rose a few ticks. But, and this is the important but, and I think the reason in your space, Peter, that we didn't see more positive response in the yield sensitive stuff, is that at the very long end of the US yield curve, the strength there was immediately wiped away. And in fact, we're trading this morning at around a 1 week high in the longest end of the yield curve. So to segue into your space, that means that we didn't get some huge support from the whole bubble mentality.
Exactly, but on slide 3 there, John, isn't it also a market that is beginning to express what the Fed wants to have the market express, namely the fact that we have average inflation targeting, and we have been running inflation be below the target for 10 years. And now we need inflation to be above the target for a considerable time. And that means we're staying put on the Fed funds rate, overnight rate, and but in the long end of the yield curve, that will have to reflect a higher inflation. Is that not
part of what's getting into this? I mean, come on. If we are going to get this this inflation that we're seeing in many markets, and we'll get to that in a moment. No, I understand your point, but if we get to some of the inflation levels, I think that that reaction it could very quickly be wiped away in coming days and weeks. So let's look at, first of all, let's break down your sectors and the reaction around that. And we'll talk about the inflation story and some of the interesting commodities movements here.
Sure. So so what happened on Friday as well, you see that on slide four. Don't read too much into the Chinese consumer technology basket. That one is always lacking by a day because the markets there was closed. But if you look across the space, I've said it in our internal call, our bubble stocks basket, it was really a diversion away from the rest of the, you know, the you know, high flying sectors, the small speculative parts of the market, e-commerce within the middle, green transformation, next gen medicine baskets were bid, crypto and semiconductors. And then you had travel and India responding to signs that aviation activity is picking up and India potentially might be peaking out here with some very strict lockdowns in place there. Hopefully the country can really, you know, turn a corner in this darkness that we're seeing right now in India. We really hope that. So that I think was the key takeaway with that bubble stocks. And that also feeds into, so you had Cathie Wood and ARK Invest, where the flow numbers on Friday showed that they are actually, they're cutting back on some of their US names and they are increasing their bets on Chinese technology stocks. And we'll talk more about that when we get to the earnings release slide. And then also on slide four, the chart to the right, stocks, your stocks 50 futures. We finally closed on Friday above that key 4,000 level. And that may basically takes European equities into a new territory. And I will still argue that on a relative basis, but also in absolute terms, if we're going to see the dollar weakening from here and we're going to see this massive value and cyclical rotation, and we'll talk more about that very, very shortly, John, I think it's a positive for Europe simply because of the index composition where US is very heavy on tech. We know that would be having a negative impact from higher rates and that will benefit Europe.
All right. And then we go to slide five because we need to talk about another market and we don't have Ulu with us, unfortunately, on the program today. But if we're looking out for, you know, future drivers of inflation, and I think there's a very important point that you made here on steel prices. But the basic inputs, of course, are the commodities, copper, for various uses among those electric vehicles, as we've pointed out endless times, but also the iron ore futures limit up in the Asian session overnight. So the Dalian iron ore futures up 10%, and they couldn't go higher because of the limits on price action. And LME copper, importantly, trading above $10,000, properly above $10,000 a ton for the first time. So a new all-time high in copper prices and iron ore futures ripping. And then the important point here on inflation, and that is the passing on, apparently, that can happen in the steel industry. Peter, you're making a point that if you need steel, you need steel, so you pay up, regardless of what your supplier is charging. That seems to be what, as well, what steelmaker stocks are saying, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, the way the construction industry works is that if you go up beyond your deadline in the contract, you're getting these daily fines. So as we talked about, you need the wood, you need the steel, you just need to get the damn thing built if you have signed the contract, if you're a construction developer or a developer of real estate. So, and you can see here on slide six, so this is the key point. So the iron ore prices are continuing to rally. If the steel makers didn't have the ability to pass on the rising input costs, you would see steel companies being shattered because they couldn't, you know, expand their profit margins and they would be stuck holding the bag, so to speak. But that's not what we're seeing. So the blue line here is the S&P Global 1200. So it covers the 1200 largest among the S&P indices and equities, the subcomponent on steelmakers. And as you can see here, I've indexed it from the day low, 23rd of March 2020. And the green one here is e-commerce and the orange one is MSCI World. And I think this is just fascinating. So we, for all the talk about technology stocks and the future and interesting growth, you have something as basic as steel getting very close to take over e-commerce in terms of total return performance since the lows. There it goes, gentlemen. And this is just, and this, it just shows you that steel makers have the ability right now to constantly pass on the rising input costs. And that's, and I would have said that, so we'll pass on his comments. That's one of the reasons why people are, traders are still betting heavily on iron ore, because as long as steelmakers are responding positively in this manner, it means that iron ore prices can continue to rise. But as you said, John, and I looked at the Eurocoin growth indicator, which is a real-time GDP tracker in Europe, and it peaked out in year-on-year growth terms in March, and already the April numbers are pulling back. So that actually goes to Sting Jacobson's point that we've peaked out in terms of growth numbers, and we'll find ourselves...
In terms of the effect of stimulus. Exactly. It's going to continue to roll through the system, but in terms of the impact effect, it's going to start fading.
Exactly. And that yeah. just basically means that the trading environment will be very different from now on.
But it could be as well, though, just to speak in favor of steel, and I have no idea what's going to happen with steel, but that the idea is the next round of stimulus is less splashing cash into, you know, consumers' pockets. It's more into infrastructure focus, et cetera, which would be more... steel heavy.
Yeah, keep them going, basically.
In terms of the mix. So let's see what happens there. That's going to be an important next step with stimulus. All right, parsing through the FX reaction, pretty simple stuff. We had long U.S. rates ending the day higher, so that keeps the yen under pressure, and then the dollar weaker because of, that near-term view on the implications for the Fed. To me, almost unbearable tension between seeing that long end going higher, because immediately, if that continues higher and it continues higher faster than these inflation expectations continue, you're going to see suddenly the U.S. yield becoming dollar supportive. So in other words, I get the knee jerk. If I focus on the implications for the Fed as the market is pricing them, fine. But if the long end of the U.S. yield curve continues to rip higher in terms of yields, unless inflation expectations match that, you've got a problem from a dollar bearish point of view. But regardless, we have to take the reaction at face value as long as it holds. And that was that we got the dollar weaker. We got euro dollar well above 120 and even to a new local high above 121.50, whatever that previous little pivot high was. So arguably looking for the new highs for the cycle there, or a try at the highs for the cycle there. You know, things like dollar Canada just plummeting to new lows. Aussie dollar breaking above that pesky 78 plus area. By the way, it's one of the contributors to that iron ore contract rising to those levels. There's so much negative energy and talk around the Australian and Chinese relationship. So maybe concerns that there could be some restrictions, I wonder, on the largest source of iron ore for China coming out of Australia. That's something to ponder there. And then adding on top of things in the case of cable. So sterling over the weekend, bolting out of the gates after the weekend because we got the Scottish election results showing that the Scottish National Party did not get that absolute majority that was largely expected for them to get. This takes a lot of the steam out of the mandate they would supposedly have reaped for, banging on for the need for a new Scottish independence referendum. Yes, the Greens, who were also in favor of leaving, picked up a couple of seats. So you've got a majority in favor of leave. But the generally strong showing for conservatives and other local elections across the UK, despite some pretty scandalous stuff coming to light on that could have impacted Boris Johnson's chances or the Conservatives' chances, you would think. It all adds up to it. Just the Scottish referendum business is seen as being so far over the horizon now after this result that it's just not worth pricing in any worry right now. So we saw a cable bursting above 140. You saw euro starting well back below that 87 area. And it's about as much support as you could expect from that outcome for sterling. And then we need to get to earnings. There's plenty of red names on your earnings overlook here on slide 8, Peter.
Yeah, so we basically just continuing this week with a lot of earnings, but the focus is shifting away from the US to very much on Europe and Asia, and particularly Japan and China. And talking about China with, we mentioned ARK Invest, investing heavily now in Chinese technology names. It's worth mentioning Alibaba, Bilibili, and XPeng. XPeng is an EV maker on Thursday, and then JD.com on Friday. You also have Li Auto, which is one of the new kits on the block in terms of producing electric vehicles. They report on Wednesday. So that, I think, will be the focus of this week. And then within U.S. technology names, we have Palantir Technologies tomorrow, and we have Walt Disney and Airbnb on Thursday. Walt Disney probably more a media company, but nevertheless, I think there is some spillover effect into technology. And then today, two things. So I will be anticipating BioNTech. The company has been extremely quiet, almost you know, got Merkel to squash down the Biden administration attempt to, you know, open up the patents on mRNA technology for vaccines against COVID-19. And Merkel has said that she really opposes that. BioNTech has been very quiet, but they are scheduled to release earnings today, probably in the US session, because it's with the partnership with Pfizer. I expect them to go out. And I think there is a, you know, Moderna, BioNTech, and CureVac, they shred $30 billion of market cap last week on that Biden proposal. And I just cannot believe that you would toss away and disregard private property rights and, you know, intellectual property rights in this way. I think there's an opportunity here in some of these vaccine companies on a mean reversion play. I think it's basically the Biden administration's attempt to, probably there have been some backdoor channeling talks and the companies haven't been budging much, but I think they're pushing, the US is pushing these companies to lower prices significantly. And then they can still keep their patents and they can use the mRNA technology for, you know, in later years for other type of drugs. But you need to ramp up production and cut those prices because we need the world vaccinated. And then finally, Panasonic, they reported in Japanese trading hours and positive reaction there in the share price. But even more importantly, I've singled out in their earnings release their forecast for the current current fiscal year. They don't run the calendar year in Japan. It runs from late March to, you know, late March next year. And as you can see here, the sales forecast for their automotive segment, which is where their battery cells is located, is up, expected to be up 16%. And that's on top of actually an operating margin expansion of almost a little bit more than 3 percentage points there. So very, very strong signal on the battery industry from Panasonic, which hopefully can feed through because the battery basket was not performing very well on Friday. And this is on slide 8 for those that are watching on the slide deck talking about earnings here.
All right. leads us to the macro calendar. A couple things, very little today, typical for Monday, but overnight we have the Chinese April PPI, considered a very good gauge to watch for global inflationary pressures, expected up 6.5% year on year. Of course, a lot of that is the basing effects of the huge price collapses in the spring of last year when the COVID outbreak was going global. This April through June timeframe is where we should be seeing this peaking, this year on year effect. So beyond that, of course, that's when you want to watch for whether it's becoming self-sustaining, these inflation rises. So expected 6.5%, let's see what it's prints. There's a lot of correlation with oil prices there. And then we have a couple of important Fed speakers, Board of Governors members, Brainard tomorrow, and especially the Clarida performance on Wednesday, if the Fed is going to try to make any points at this point in time. I somewhat doubt that, but you always need to be on your toes. And the April CPI is out from the U.S. on Wednesday and the retail sales on Friday. And interesting to see there, again, probably more into the May-June timeframe, but we have seen the consumer in the U.S. stimulated like they've never been stimulated before. I hope that didn't sound too dodgy, but I just said. You know, how quickly that fading is, as we saw, the fade was rather quick the last time around last year in the wake of the end of those stimulus checks. And as well, I just want to pull out, just because of the price action in Dollar Canada, it looks so aggressive to me relative to what's going on in terms of rate spreads, in terms of the oil price. I wonder if the Bank of Canada's Governor Macklem might try to make the point to do a shot across the bow maneuver against the market on this very aggressive move in Dollar Canada. So be on your toes for that. Certainly worth looking at that as an event risk for traders of the Canadian dollar. All right, let's. I think it's going to be interesting to see whether this knee-jerk reaction, if we see a follow-on to that, or we see it's a second guest here the early part of the week. The reaction to the U.S. jobs report on Friday. And we'll see, of course, where things stand tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.